way of man is not his, neither is it in a man to walk and to direct his steps. 172. And the Lord himself says to Israel, I will direct him like a green fir tree. From me is thy fruit found. 173. Chapter 14. That knowledge of the law is given by the guidance and illumination of the Lord. The knowledge also of the law itself they daily endeavor to gain, not by diligence in reading, but by the guidance and illumination of God, as they say to him, Show me thy ways, O Lord, and teach me thy paths, and open thou mine eyes, and I shall see the wondrous things of thy law. And teach me to do thy will, for thou art my God. And again, Who teacheth man knowledge? 174. Chapter 15. That the understanding by means of which we can recognize God's commands and the performance of a good will are both gifts from the Lord. Further, the blessed David asks of the Lord that he may gain that very understanding by which he can recognize God's commands, which, he well knew, were written in the book of the law. And he says, I am thy servant. O give me understanding that I may learn thy commandments. 175. Certainly he was in possession of understanding, which had been granted to him by nature, and also had at his fingers' ends a knowledge of God's commands, which were preserved in writing in the law. And still he prayed the Lord that he might learn this more thoroughly, as he knew that what came to him by nature would never be sufficient for him, unless his understanding was enlightened by the Lord by a daily illumination from him, to understand the law spiritually and to recognize his commands more clearly, as the chosen vessel, also declares very plainly this which we are insisting on. For it is God which worketh in you both to will and to do according to good will. 176. What could well be clearer than the assertion that both our good will and the completion of our work are fully wrought in us by the Lord? And again, for it is granted to you for Christ's sake not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for him. 177. Here also he declares that the beginning of our conversion and faith and the endurance of suffering is a gift to us from the Lord. And David, too, as he knows this, similarly prays that the same thing may be granted to him by God's mercy. Strengthen, O God, that which thou hast wrought in us. 178. Showing that it is not enough for the beginning of our salvation to be granted by the gift and grace of God, unless it has been continued and ended by the same pity and continual help from him. For not free will, but the Lord looseth them that are bound. No strength of ours, but the Lord raiseth them that are fallen. No diligence in reading, but the Lord enlightens the blind. Where the Greeks have... Greek, I'm going to spell it. K-U-R-I-O-S. S-O-F-O-I. T-U-F-L-O-U-S, i.e., the Lord maketh wise the blind. No care on our part, but the Lord careth for the stranger. No courage of ours, but the Lord assists or supports all those who are down. 179. But this we say not to slight our zeal and efforts of diligence, as if they were applied unnecessarily and foolishly, but that we may know that we cannot strive without the help of God. Nor can our efforts be of any use in securing the great reward of purity, unless it has been granted to us by the assistance and mercy of the Lord. For a horse is prepared for the day of battle, but help cometh from the Lord. 180. For no man can prevail by strength. 181. We ought then always to sing with the blessed David, My strength and my praise is not my free will, but the Lord, and he is become my salvation. 182. And the teacher of the Gentiles was not ignorant of this, when he declared that he was made capable of the ministry of the New Testament, not by his own merits or efforts, but by the mercy of God. Not, says he, that we are capable of thinking anything of ourselves as of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God, which can be put in less good Latin, but more forcibly. Our capability is of God. And then there follows, Who also made us capable ministers of the New Testament. 183. Chapter 16. That faith itself must be given us by the Lord. But so thoroughly did the apostles realize that everything which concerns salvation was given them by the Lord, that they even asked that faith itself should be granted from the Lord, saying, "Add to us faith," 184, as they did not imagine that it could be gained by free will, but believed that it would be bestowed by the free gift of God. Lastly, the author of man's salvation teaches us how feeble and weak and insufficient our faith would be unless it were strengthened by the aid of the Lord, when he says to Peter, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed to my Father that thy faith fail not." 185. And another, finding that this was happening in his own case, and seeing that his faith was being driven by the waves of unbelief on the rocks which would cause a fearful shipwreck, asks of the same Lord an aid to his faith, saying, "Lord, help mine unbelief." 186. So thoroughly then did those apostles and men in the gospel realize that everything which is good is brought to perfection by the aid of the Lord, and not imagine that they could preserve their faith unharmed by their own strength or free will, that they prayed that it might be helped or granted to them by the Lord. And if in Peter's case there was need of the Lord's help that it might not fail, who will be so presumptuous and blind as to fancy that he has no need of daily assistance from the Lord in order to preserve it? Especially as the Lord himself has made this clear in the gospel, saying, "As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself except it abide in the vine, so no more can ye except ye abide in me." 187. And again, "For without me ye can do nothing." 188. How foolish and wicked then it is to attribute any good action to our own diligence and not to God's grace and assistance is clearly shown by the Lord's saying, which lays down that no one can show forth the fruits of the Spirit without his inspiration and cooperation. For every good gift and every perfect boon is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. 189. And Zechariah 2 says, "For whatever is good is his, and what is excellent is from him." 190. And so the blessed apostle consistently says, "What hast thou which thou didst not receive? But if thou didst receive it, why boastest thou as if thou hadst not received it?" 191. Chapter 17. That temperateness and the endurance of temptations must be given to us by the Lord, and that all the endurance with which we can bear the temptations brought upon us depends not so much on our own strength as on the mercy and guidance of God, the blessed apostle thus declares, "No temptation hath come upon you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation make also a way of escape, that ye may be able to bear it." 192. And that God fits and strengthens our souls for every good work, and worketh in us all those things which are pleasing to him, the same apostle teaches. May the God of peace, who brought out of darkness the great shepherd of the sheep, Jesus Christ, in the blood of the everlasting testament, fit you in all goodness, working in you what is well-pleasing in his sight. 193. And that the same thing may happen to the Thessalonians, he prays as follows, saying, "Now our Lord Jesus Christ himself, and God our Father, who hath loved us and hath given us everlasting consolation and good hope and grace, exhort your hearts and confirm you in every good work and word." 194. 18. That the continual fear of God must be bestowed on us by the Lord. And lastly, the prophet Jeremiah, speaking in the person of God, clearly testifies that even the fear of God, by which we can hold fast to him, is shed upon us by the Lord, saying as follows, "And I will give them one heart and one way, that they may fear me all days, and that it may be well with them and with their children after them. And I will make an everlasting covenant with them and will not cease to do them good. And I will give my fear in their hearts that they may not revolt from me. 195. Ezekiel also says, And I will give them one heart and will put a new spirit in their bowels. And I will take away the stony heart out of their flesh and will give them a heart of flesh that they may walk in my commandments and keep my judgments and do them and that they may be my people and I may be their God. 196. Chapter 19. That the beginning of our goodwill and its completion comes from God. And this plainly teaches us that the beginning of our goodwill is given to us by the inspiration of the Lord, when he draws us towards the way of salvation either by his own act, or by the exhortations of some man, or by compulsion, and that the consummation of our good deeds is granted by him in the same way, but that it is in our own power to follow up the encouragement and assistance of God with more or less zeal, and that accordingly we are rightly visited either with reward or with punishment, because we have been either careless or careful to correspond to his design and providential arrangement made for us with such kindly regard. And this is clearly and plainly described in Deuteronomy, when, says he, the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land which thou art going to possess, and shall have destroyed many nations before thee, the Hittite, and the Girgashite, and the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite, seven nations much more numerous than thou art and stronger than thou, and the Lord thy God shall have delivered them to thee. Thou shalt utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no league with them, neither shalt thou make marriage with them. 197. So then Scripture declares that it is the free gift of God that they are brought into the land of promise, that many nations are destroyed before them, that nations more numerous and mightier than the people of Israel are given up into their hands. But whether Israel utterly destroys them, or whether it preserves them alive and spares them, and whether or no it makes a league with them and makes marriages with them or not, it declares lies in their own power. And by this testimony we can clearly see what we ought to ascribe to free will, and what to the design and daily assistance of the Lord, and that it belongs to divine grace to give us opportunities of salvation and prosperous undertakings and victory, but that it is ours to follow up the blessings which God gives us with earnestness or indifference. And this same fact we see is plainly taught in the healing of the blind men. For the fact that Jesus passed by them was a free gift of divine providence and condescension. But the fact that they cried out and said, Have mercy on us, Lord, thou son of David, 198, was an act of their own faith and belief. That they received the sight of their eyes was a gift of divine pity. But that after the reception of any blessing, the grace of God and the use of free will both remain. The case of the 10 lepers, who were all healed alike, shows us. For when one of them, through goodness of will, returned thanks, the Lord, looking for the 9 and praising the 1, showed that he was ever anxious to help even those who were unmindful of his kindness. For even this is a gift of his visitation, viz., that he receives and commends the grateful one, and looks for and censures those who are thankless. Chapter 20. That nothing can be done in this world without God. But it is right for us to hold with unswerving faith that nothing whatever is done in this world without God. For we must acknowledge that everything is done either by his will or by his permission, i.e., we must believe that whatever is good is carried out by the will of God and by his aid, and whatever is the reverse is done by his permission. When the divine protection is withdrawn from us for our sins and the hardness of our hearts, and suffers the devil and the shameful passions of the body to lord it over us. And the words of the apostle most assuredly teach us this, when he says, For this cause God delivered them up to shameful passions. And again, because they did not like to have God in their knowledge, God delivered them up to a reprobate sense to do those things which are not convenient. 199. And the Lord himself says by the prophet, But my people did not hear my voice, and Israel did not obey me. Wherefore I gave them up unto their own heart's lusts. They shall walk after their own inventions. 200. Chapter 21. An Objection on the Power of Free Will. Germanus. This passage very clearly shows the freedom of the will, where it is said, If my people would have hearkened unto me, and elsewhere, but my people would not hear my voice. 201. For when he says, If they would have heard, he shows that the decision to yield or not to yield lay in their own power. How then is it true that our salvation does not depend upon ourselves, if God himself has given us the power either to hearken or not to hearken? Chapter 22. The answer, viz., that our free will always has need of the help of the Lord. Papnudius, you have shrewdly enough noticed how it is said, if they would have hearkened to me, but have not sufficiently considered either who it is who speaks to one who does or does not hearken, or what follows. I should soon have put down their enemies and laid my hand on those that trouble them. 202. Let no one, then, try by a false interpretation to twist that which we brought forward to prove that nothing can be done without the Lord, nor take it in support of free will, in such a way as to try to take away from man the grace of God and his daily oversight through this test. But my people did not hear my voice, and again, if my people would have hearkened unto me, and if Israel would have walked in my ways, etc. But let him consider that just as the power of free will is evidenced by the disobedience of the people, so the daily oversight of God who declares and admonishes him is also shown. For where he says, If my people would have hearkened unto me, he clearly implies that he had spoken to them before, and this the Lord was wont to do, not only by means of the written law, but also by daily exhortations, as this which is given by Isaiah. All day long have I stretched forth my hands to a disobedient and gainsaying people. 203. Both points, then, can be supported from this passage where it says, If my people would have hearkened, and if Israel had walked in my ways, I should soon have put down their enemies and laid my hand on those that trouble them. For just as free will is shown by the disobedience of the people, so the government of God and his assistance is made clear by the beginning and end of the verse, where he implies that he had spoken to them before, and that afterwards he would put down their enemies, if they would have hearkened unto him. For we have no wish to do away with man's free will by what we have said, but only to establish the fact that the assistance and grace of God are necessary to it every day and hour. When he had instructed us with this discourse, Abbot Papnudius dismissed us from his cell before midnight in a state of contrition rather than of liveliness, insisting on this as the chief lesson in his discourse, viz., that when we fancy that by making perfect the first renunciation, which we were endeavoring to do with all our powers, we could climb the heights of perfection, we should make the discovery that we had not yet even begun to dream of the heights to which a monk can rise. Since, after we had learnt some few things about the second renunciation, we should find out that we had not before this even heard a word of the third stage, in which all perfection is comprised, and which in many ways far exceeds these lower ones. Conference 4. Conference of Abbot Daniel. On the Lust of the Flesh and of the Spirit. Complete contents, other version available, text 44K.